Hello, listeners. Welcome to Business IQ Radio. This is Don Byrne broadcasting to you on WBNH 105.1 FM, coming to you from Bedford, New Hampshire. And I'm here with my friend and colleague, Andrea O'Brien.
Hey, Don. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Enjoying the fall weather.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And with the fall comes a number of events, some of which we'll talk about. But if you're new to Business IQ Radio, let me just say welcome. We hope that you become a regular listener of our show. If you'd like to learn a little bit about some of the previous shows, you can easily find that. You can go to Podbean. That's an N at the end of the word bean, podbean.org. And at the back of, or I'm sorry, .com. So it's podbean.com. And all you do in the front of that is put WBNH 1051. So it's WBNH1051.podbean.com. And look through the scroll down, and you'll find Business IQ Radio in there. It's listed chronologically. You can't find it as a group in there. But we've had some really terrific shows recently. And by the way, I appreciate the listener feedback on that. So you can do that. And you can also come and like us on Facebook. So just go to Facebook and look for WBNH Bedford Radio would be the Facebook account. And please give us any comments, feedback, suggestions, whatever, for guests. We would we really value that. We have an interesting guest coming in today, one of your colleagues, right, Andrea?
Yes. And, you know, before we transition over to her, I would just say that I would really love our listeners to, if your business is in particular, tell us what you want to know about, what topics haven't we covered, and we definitely want to get that information out because if it's valuable to you, it'll be valuable to others.
And by the way, if you are someone who is an entrepreneur starting up a new business, or if you have an existing business that you're looking to move to the next level, or even if you're sort of at the end of your term with a business and are deciding, maybe I'd like to find an exit strategy, I do recommend that you should contact the Small Business Development Center and Andrea and her teammates who have terrific resources available to you to help you out. Andrea, what's the best way for people to reach you guys?
So our main office is on the Durham campus at the Peter T. Paul College, and that number is 862-2203, 862-2203. And no matter where you are in New Hampshire, they can get you to the right regional office. So I would start with that phone call.
And then for a website, where would you like them to go?
NHSBDC.org.
Terrific. Very, very good.
Thanks.
So we're into, if you're listening to us live, by the way, we broadcast every week at this time and on Sundays, so Saturday mornings, Sunday evenings. If you're listening to us live, we're into September. And with the coming of the fall comes a number of interesting events and exciting activities, the culmination of a few business contests and some other interesting upcoming events. And maybe, Andrew, you can tell us about some of them. I think we have something actually here in Bedford at the LaBelle Winery coming up.
Yes, this is a really great event. And if there's any way you can get to it, I totally recommend it. It's called Just One Thing. It's on October 20th. And it's hosted by the New Hampshire Businesses for Social Responsibility. And it's a really interesting, fun event where businesses are asked to present just one thing in 90 seconds that they've done to make their businesses more sustainable. And then the audience gets to vote via a handheld device on who's the winner, and prizes are given out. And it's a great opportunity to network too. So that is on October 20th. But they have one other event coming up on October 13th, which is, it looks like a meeting, and it's the title of it is The Business Case for Putting a Price on Carbon.
Very interesting. Yeah. And then we have weekly OSHA events, monthly events continuing with the OSHA roundtables, right? I think that you actually in the NHSBDC website, people can find that information under the events tab. Am I right?
That's right. And in October, the event is going to be a tour of Osram, Sylvania, seeing their best practices and around safety. And that's a 30-person registration list. After that, we close it off. So,
great breakfast that they give.
We do have a very nice breakfast. Yeah. The sponsors are very generous.
I guess one other major event that I want to mention that's coming to its conclusion, and if you are fans of shows like Shark Tank or some of the other ones that are out there, the reality TV shows, well, we'll give you reality, but real reality, not TV-based. Dyne, the large technology company in downtown Manchester, is hosting something called Tech Out. Tech Out is sponsored by the New Hampshire High Tech Council, and it is a business plan competition. I believe up to $100,000 is awarded in three prizes. So it's probably something like, but I can't attest to this, $50,000 and then $30,000 and $20,000 or something like that awarded to the winners of the plan. And people present their plans, and I believe the third award is based on the feedback of the audience. So I believe the judges decide the first two of them, and then we have the audience takes us from there. So that's just a quick review of some of the upcoming activities. A lot of things going on as we enter the fall, and we have some pretty good guests. In fact, I think next week we actually have someone who can tell us a lot more about these, which is I think you've arranged for Mark Kaplan from the Alpha Loft to be here. But before I get into that, I think I'll turn it over to you to talk a little bit about our guest for today, who's out in your office in Keene. And you folks have offices all over the state, right?
We do. We have offices in Keene, the Seacoast, the in the Littleton area, Nashua, Manchester, in the Laconia area, and I might be leaving one or two out. But so we cover the state very well. And but Nancy Dubosc is the Keene Regional Director of the SBDC, and she's our guest today. Let me tell you a little bit about Nancy.
I see her out in the hallway now, so
well, let me
very good.
Quickly get it in then. So she has 20 years' experience as a lender and a consultant and a regional planner and teacher. She has broad industry experience, but her specialty is small-scale agricultural and light manufacturing and with tourism and service and retail kind of mixed in there. And she works very hard out in the Keene region to foster a very fertile environment for businesses to grow and sustain themselves and grow.
I don't know if that was a pun that you put in there in terms of businesses out there that are growing and are sustainable, because I know that there is a resurgence. This is one of the things we want to talk to her about, is the resurgence of agriculture that's going on out in the Monadnock area, which has a big impact on us here in Bedford and the Manchester area, because more and more of the restaurants are locally sourcing their food.
Local is very important. And, you know, I know when I go out to dinner and I see the local farm, that's just more fun. And
I look for it as well. I think the other thing that we can ask her about is I've heard that there are some interesting microbreweries going out there. I don't know if that's taking place anywhere else in the state. Do you know if that are there any?
Oh,
is it all concentrated in Monadnock, or do you have any?
We in the Manchester and Concord region, there are new microbreweries springing up all the time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good.
And,
well, maybe
and
we should
distilleries.
We should have a remote broadcast, perhaps, from one of those. That
I think we should have a traveling broadcast.
Yeah, we should have a traveling broadcast. That would make a lot of sense. So once again, Business IQ Radio here on 105.1. And as we mentioned before, a lot of good upcoming events in this time of the year. You can write to us if you like, certainly through Facebook. And again, if you're interested in catching up on some of our previous shows, please do go to wbnh1051podbean.com, scroll through it historically, and look for Business IQ Radio. And so I think you're here with us this week, and then you're here with us next week, and then you're off to, I think you're heading south for a little while, right?
We have a conference, a huge national association of small business development centers conferences. You know, we're a national organization, and there's an SBDC network in every state.
Well, you always come back with good information. I think it was at the last conference that you learned a little bit about the Kiva effort, which was a show that we just broadcast with Jake. I always get Jake's last name wrong.
Non-Wheeler.
Non-Wheeler, right. And I will tell the audience, if you didn't catch that show, I really recommend going back and looking for that one. It's a very interesting program, a new type of crowdfunding program. And full disclosure, I actually have friends who are running a business, and I've recommended that they begin taking a look at that program. So, and I think we were so impressed, I think we actually asked Jake to come back periodically and give us an update on what's going on. And if you listen to that show, you'll hear that there's a lot of different variations to this crowdfunding platform. In fact, I'm going to make a note to myself so that next week when Mark Kaplan from the Alpha Loft is in here, we can ask him a question or two about that. But so I see Nancy out in the hallway. So why don't we bring her in? Once again, thanks for listening to tuning in to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH. And I'm going to turn over to you, Andrea, to bring Nancy in and welcome her.
So we're very excited to have Nancy DeBosque from the Keene SBDC office. She is the regional manager, and it's such a pleasure to have my coworker, Nancy, with us today. So, Nancy, welcome.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm glad to be here.
And I understand you had no problem finding your way to our studio because you know Bedford.
I do know Bedford. I've been in Keene only a little over a year, and prior to that, I was in Concord, New Hampshire, for 18 years.
And I understand you were involved in some aspect of the media up there as well, right? Doing some.
Well, my career has led me through many alleyways and back doors and some front doors with the media. And I've been on TV. I've been on the radio. I've had some very fun experiences and absolutely love doing this.
And a bunch of other impressive things that Andrea took us through at the beginning of the show. So
yep.
We'll cycle back to those pretty quickly.
I'd like to point out that Nancy had no problem finding the station because when I gave her the directions, she's coming from Keene. So it's take 101 and one turn and turn right or left onto Meeting House. So
yeah, well, and we said that it's very fortunate because 101's about to undergo this construction, as we all know. So your timing is impeccable.
I lucked out.
Absolutely. So you said you came down from Concord and you've only been in Keene for a while. Do you come from New Hampshire? Are you a native of this state or area?
I am not a native. Actually, I hail from originally from New York. So many people do around here.
Me
and
too.
And I was in Massachusetts for 28 years, building my career.
Me too.
In economic development. And so where I am in Keene is actually a stone's throw over the border from where I lived in western Massachusetts in the Pioneer Valley.
So New York, New York City, or the rest of New York?
A little of both.
Okay. I grew up in Queens, New York.
Yes. So,
as my accent will at some point in time
disclose. Every now and then it slips out, doesn't it?
Yeah. I tell people that I put R's in words you never knew had them and leave them out of places you expected to see them. So.
So you
joined SBDC how long ago, I'm sorry?
A little over a year. The job opportunity came up. In fact, it was kind of fun. I was in consulting at that time, and I brought one of my clients to the SBDC office in Manchester where Andrea works. And I walked in the door and ran into another colleague, Julie, who works there. And she just happened to mention that there was a position available in Keene. And I wasn't really ready to take on full-time work at that point in time. But I got home, I thought about it for about a week, and I said, yeah, that sounds like the right thing for me now.
Dare I make the pun? Were you keen about Keene?
Absolutely. I was totally keen about Keene. Well, having done some work there previously in community economic development, I knew the community pretty well and some of the players there, so I felt comfortable.
So something that I've picked up, Nancy, as I've known you, and I'm not going to say that you're a hippie because I wouldn't say that because you're not. Oh, you are. Thumbs are up. I sensed that you were a little bit of a hippie in your younger days and that you have a lot of experience on the farm or knowing people on farms or growing things?
I have to chuckle that there's not necessarily a correlation between hippies and farming.
It's the communal. It's the commune.
That's back in the 60s. And I do come from the 60s, and I'm a child of the Woodstock generation, yes. But I hope I've shrugged that image off a little bit. But yes, I actually, it's so interesting. I really launched my career in business development back in the late 70s when I became, after a process of working my way up through a nonprofit organization, became the executive director of a research and demonstration farm. Who knew? Coming from New York, you know?
Well, you're very professional looking. The tie-dyed hair is the only thing that gives it away. So.
What can you explain a little bit about what that is?
And I will, yes. Back then, we didn't have access to all the wonderful software programs and business development resources that we have now, which are just, you know, right off of the internet. They're phenomenal. Back then, we had a pen or a pencil and an eraser and a piece of lined paper. And I learned, let's say, the hard way, how to create financial statements, how to create a business plan, marketing strategy for a small-scale diversified farm operation. And this is no hippie business. Believe me, this was very serious business. And this was a matter of making a small-scale diversified farm profitable. So long story short, over a period of about a decade, I got very good at that. And learned the hurdles and the huge challenges before small scale diversified farms. And in fact, and maybe you get back to the hippie part of this, it was all organic farming.
Back then,
yes. And that was during the time when we were pushing for organic certification. I was very involved in that with the 1984 Farm Bill. And as all of that evolved, I became very, you know, proficient in talking about not only policy around small-scale farming, but also techniques, which was really important. So I got to know my product very well. I got to know my business model very well. And needless to say, that has had a tremendous influence on what I do now and the types of small businesses that I tend to focus on and can help out in my work as a small business development advisor over in Keene. Now, the Keene region is loaded for bear with small-scale diversified farms, community-supported agriculture, which is a slightly different model of your typical diversified farm, which we can talk about a little bit. There are a lot of value-added farm, on-farm and off-farm value-added food products, and then there's a specialty food industry, which in our region and increasingly across the country is focusing on buying their ingredients locally. So they're value-adding product using local sources of ingredients, which is so exciting.
Yeah, I feel like the farming industry is making, I mean, not a resurgence necessarily this year, but over the last few years. And I've talked to a lot of people that are interested in hydroponic.
Mm-hmm.
Does that fall into your bailiwick?
Yes, it does. And hydroponics is very interesting. It's challenging. It's extremely challenging. I actually have a client right now who's developed a patent for small-scale hydroponic growing, small-scale greenhouse for in-home application as well as, you know, basic consumer application to small-scale farm application. And we believe that there is a growing market for that product, and it's very exciting. So that this is another next level of how agriculture can help drive the economy, in that this is a manufactured product and in a prototype being developed into, you know, a marketable product.
So with the drop in the cost of energy, that has to help your clients as well, because I know that farms can be very energy intensive.
Farms can be extremely energy intensive. However, New England farmers have come up with incredible ways of becoming sustainable and energy efficient, sustainable. There's a fair amount of use of passive solar on farms.
For what purpose? For what purpose? I thought most of it would be good old-fashioned sunshine, rain.
A lot in New England. There's a lot of pre-season, pre-typical season and post-typical season growing in greenhouses, having to shelter animals, livestock. There are all sorts of energy efficiency technologies that they use that have been around for a while.
And preparing the land, I would think, besides preparing the land.
Sure, using appropriate technologies to prepare the land.
I mean, when I think of a farm, I think of tractors and other you know, devices or other pieces of tools that are out and you're harvesting. And those can consume a lot of energy at some point in time. I've been told by other people who are in that business that the change in the price of oil has really helped a lot.
Yes, it has. A lot of the farms that I work with are quite small, and so they're fairly labor intensive. But the good news is that they hire people.
Good jobs, good paying jobs? Relatively speaking.
For the people that are wanting those jobs, I mean, we're not talking California migrant labor here. We're talking primarily local youth. University interns that want to work on a farm for a year. So it's relative to what the demand is.
I had a work study job one summer planting potatoes.
Oh my.
At the University of Maine. That was, and I loved it because I was outside. You're right. Students love being.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be learned from not only just being on the farm and experiencing that, there's a lot to be learned about entrepreneurship. Because to me, farmers are the ultimate entrepreneurs. A successful farmer knows it all, has figured it out, and mostly done it on their own, which is fascinating.
What would you say some of the challenges are, maybe not immediate challenges with this summer, because I know we're in the midst of a drought, but overall, what are the challenges that farmers in this industry face?
Yes, this drought has been horrible. It's been devastating. It primarily what the drought means is lower crop yields and lower price, profit margins. So, I would say that not unlike any small business, their biggest challenges are A, financing, and B, marketing. And we see that in our work as small business advisors across the board. So financing, it's very interesting given the fact that we don't have large-scale farms here that are looking for, millions of dollars of capital improvements or investments. We have, as you say, Mary Doe looking for a tractor. And in fact, I had a client who did a crowdfunding campaign for just that. And raised enough money to buy a used tractor. And crowdfunding, as you may have discussed already on this show, crowdfunding is an online platform for raising investment capital, typically initially through family and friends. In this case, that's what it was. They were able to raise $5,000 immediately. But crowdfunding can also blossom into or develop into funding from wider and wider circles of friends and networks. So we're finding that financing is a huge challenge. Farms typically don't have the collateral for a conventional bank loan. They're very risky. As we were just saying, the drought this summer, they're very tied to, seasonality and weather. And climate change. And so for a conventional banker to look at those risks makes it very difficult for a farm to go. And so, one of the things that I love about New England is being resourceful is that we have a lot of farm financing programs.
I was going to ask you about that. And before we launch into that, I'd just like to tell everyone that they're listening to WBNH 105.1. Bedford Community Radio, and our guest today is Nancy DuBosc. She is the Keene Regional Director for the Small Business Development Center, and her specialty is agricultural businesses and local farm-to-table and also specialty foods. And Nancy's, I didn't hate to interrupt you, so go on, Nancy.
No, that's fine. I just want to say that there are tremendous resources available through USDA, through Farm Credit Service, through Farm Bureau. There amazing amount of resources available for farmers nowadays, and so much of it is online. And so many farms, most farms nowadays are online, and they're quite sophisticated, actually, in their use of online resources.
Can you go into a little more detail about the resources and maybe some of the things that they offer? For example, USDA, I mean, that United States Department of Agriculture.
Yep. USDA provides, I won't spend the time listing out all their programs, but they have easily five programs available to small-scale farmers that provide financing, provide loan guarantees. Occasionally, you'll fall over a grant program, but I hesitate to say that because grants are very few and far between.
And can you help them approach this agency?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that, as SBDC counselors, I think we're really good at doing is identifying resources. And how we work with our clients, in this case, a small-scale farm client, would be to determine what their needs are. If their financial needs, we, you know, go right to our resources and kind of vet the situation, determine whether or not that's a good match. If they need soil conservation, if they need a new farm building, if they need to buy inventory in the way of cattle or horses, we figure out the best match for them given the resources that are out there. And those, as far as financial needs, those run the gamut from possibly getting a conventional loan with an SBA guarantee, but more typically working through our federal agencies like USDA and Rural Development and Farm Credit Service.
Nancy, is this resurgence that you're talking about something that's unique to New Hampshire, New England, or is this taking place across the country?
I think it's regional. And I would say that as I've observed, and I've worked in small business development and economic development throughout New England for the last, 30 years, it's cyclical, based a lot on national economy, based a lot on weather, of course. But I would say here in New Hampshire, it's regional, and we're seeing definitely an uptick in activity in the Monadnock region. And what's interesting is some of these are farmers, and particularly millennials, young people, startup farmers who are moving to the region because there is so much support. There is.
Are they buying their own land, or are they?
No, they're not, and that's a really good question. They're matching up often with farms that are in a conservation easement or have sold the development rights, and perhaps the farmers have gotten a little too old to farm anymore but want to keep the farm going. Mm-hmm. And there are several programs out there that actually match young, new startup farmers to existing farmsteads. And we're seeing a lot of that. I have two incredibly exciting projects on historic farms that where the original farmers, or I should say that the current farmers are retiring, and these are highly successful, beautiful farmsteads that they don't want to let go. So there are programs out there that will actually match their networks where you can actually match young farmers, new farmers, and there's a lot of that going on in the Monadnock region right now, and it's very exciting.
Well, what if you're a farm located in the, Upper Valley or east of the Monadnock region? Can people call you and still get answers?
Oh, absolutely. I can definitely send people in the right direction. Of course, we work as within our region, we work with clients long term. But as somebody that has a lot of knowledge and as part of the SBDC network statewide, yes, I do make myself available to provide that information throughout the state.
So I'm a little curious about, is there a diversity of the crops and offerings that are coming. For example, we have a lovely winery here that has opened up.
LaBelle.
Yeah, here in Bedford. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think you traditionally think of New Hampshire as a wine-growing area, although upstate New York certainly has, and for certain kinds of wines it makes sense. But sort of what are the crops? What are we going to become noted for? And is it more than potatoes? Is it more than kale?
It already is. Many of the farms, the smaller scale farms, are extremely diversified. So they're offering cheese products, meat products, and vegetable products. And in many cases, very unique products that go to farmers market that are could be heirloom products, heirloom varieties of lettuces or tomatoes that people have never heard of. And what's interesting on the other side is the marketing and the consumer. And you have to pay attention to that very carefully. And in different regions within New Hampshire, the level of consumer education, interest, and demand for these products, it's really high in our region. So if you go to the farmers market, you're going to see some pretty extraordinary and exquisite products there.
Don't you love going to farmers markets this time of year? Don, do you visit them?
I just can't wait for Saturday to come.
Yeah. And you mentioned the winery. New Hampshire right now has a huge upsurge in nano breweries. And people, this is a destination tourism business.
I was going to say, I'm hoping that consumption is keeping up with the available product, supply and demand.
Well, right? What people do is fun. What people do is they come to a state and they go on a nano tour, a nano brewery tour. And I have another client that's starting a nano brewery out in the Monadnock region. They're talking about the New Hampshire Nano Brewery Trail. And there's a whole culture.
Don?
There's a whole culture that they get to pile together, get in the car. They go for a long weekend. Might come up to New Hampshire and start in Portsmouth and maybe come through the Lakes region, hit the Connecticut River, come down, come through our region.
Are they still standing by the time they...
No, these are not
a
drinkers.
A lot of bathroom breaks.
These are people that appreciate, because these are craft beers, and many of them are created in season. So they're season. They're called saison. Mm-hmm. Beers where they're creating recipes using local products. So that it could be a blueberry beer, it could be a maple beer, all depending on what's happening in the region. Where my nano is going to be located, there's a chocolatier. So there's going to be a chocolate beer, which I can't wait to try. Fascinating.
I see the secondary effect of what you're talking about, because there are so many of the restaurants in and around the area, or even in Manchester, that they're advertising, you know, bought local, grown local. And that, I think that dynamic really resonates, as you said before, with the people as people become more educated.
Yes.
They're happy to see that. You're happy not to have leakage of the economy in terms of this, you know, the money leaving the environment, staying here, and it's circulating and doing a lot of work.
That's really true. And that's the point, really, is to keep everything local, keep your economy, you know, in a closed cycle type of environment, with money not leaving your region to the best extent possible. And that's, you know, by and large, the premise doing this.
I was going to ask you that the crops grown in New Hampshire are typically consumed in New Hampshire, or are they exported? You know, I know there's a huge movement for local food. Restaurants sometimes stake their claim on the fact that they're featuring these local products.
There are a lot of programs now, nonprofits that are connecting farms with restaurants, connecting farm produce with institutional buying of food, which is really exciting. There are a lot of schools that have bought into this program, which for a farmer is great, because they know they need to grow so many acres of potatoes and tomatoes and celery and lettuce to supply, you know, Bedford High School or their kitchen program, their food program throughout the year. And that's a wonderful situation to have set up, because that provides security for the farmer. But yes, there is just growing awareness of the higher nutrition of local, keeping the economy local, And the community involvement, that community giving back, that community, it's not philanthropy, but it's that community involvement in their local farm.
The social consciousness.
Social consciousness. And the community-supported agriculture really supports that in that they get people to come to the farm, actually work on the farm. People are actively involved in choosing what they want as part of their share in the farm. And that's really growing in leaps and bounds in our regions. In fact, they're beginning to compete with each other,
so,
which is really interesting.
I'm going to maybe touch on something a little controversial. You mentioned that there's a movement towards heirloom seeding of crops. Where is New Hampshire in terms of GMO, genetically modified products? Is it a trend here? Is it counter to what's happening? Are smaller farms? I mean, is that a key for a small farm to be successful in terms of yield? I would think that that's one of the arguments that's made.
Not in New Hampshire.
So on the way over, I was listening to the radio, and they talked about
105.1, I'm sure.
Exactly. It was NPR. And they were talking about Monsanto selling its seed division to a German company, and that this would consolidate. You know, this is not a monopoly, but almost. Mm-hmm. And now all the farmers are going to be concerned about where their seeds come from, and are there competitors? And, I mean,
There are a lot of seed companies out there that have been around for a long time that provide non-GMO. And yes, they may cost a little bit more, but it is becoming increasingly, you're right, Andrea, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to find out, to get that information, you know, the right to know laws around seeds and how they're grown probably are not as good as the right to know about farm spraying, you know.
Yeah, I think the labeling legislation nationally was defeated. Right?
Yeah. But I would say in New Hampshire, I think that the general sentiment is to go non-GMO when possible. And as having farmed and dealt with this, understanding that fine line between production and profitability and philosophy and perhaps not only philosophy, but health and nutrition. There's a fine line there, and farmers are always walking that line.
So I know that farmers have always sort of been leaders in technology. They're quick to use technology. Mm-hmm. And I also know that a lot of people, myself included, have little we grow some vegetables and things like this on our property. Are you seeing that as an increasing trend? It seems that people, at least that I know, are more and more taking advantage of the ability to easily grow tomatoes and zucchini and things like this in their home. And is that, you know, is this becoming sort of a cottage industry where people are putting a half step into the farming area? Is that something you're seeing, or is it still being left to the professionals?
As far as market gardening, as far as selling products, no, I don't see that. Occasionally, somebody will come in and they'll want to start up a very small scale operation and sell at the farmer's market. They're not going to make money. They really have to scale up in order to be profitable. So I would answer that question to say that I don't actually see an uptick in very small or that self-sufficient gardener kind of thing. I don't see a trend towards that
Except if this new kind of greenhouse technology that your client has maybe will take off. Maybe that'll
Is that hydroponic?
That's hydroponic.
Okay, yeah.
Right. Yes, that's definitely hydroponic. But where I see the growth is in the scaling up of what you're talking about to serve markets such as farmers markets, community-supported agriculture, and this farm-to-table and coordinated industrial institutional buying of food as in a sort of a cooperative buying model. But I don't see that much.
Interesting here in Bedford because over by Joppa Hill Farm, where we have the soccer fields, you can apply and get a plot over there. And many, many people, I know, I have a friend who just harvested 100, 150 tomatoes he had growing. And what's nice is I'm also member of the Merrimack Beekeepers Association. Oh. So there are some hives that we've put on that property to help with pollination and things like this. So there are some people who I think are picking up on the tradition of the victory garden
yes.
that I grew up with
mm-hmm.
and are trying to, I think, supplement just for the health purposes and really knowing about your food, where it's coming from, or feeling good about doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's fantastic. Community gardening has been going on for a long time. Concord supports huge community gardening plots, Concord, New Hampshire. And we actually had, it was so interesting, most of the people there are there for therapeutic reasons, to get out of work and go get their hands dirty. And it's a very social environment. But we also had many plots there that were being leased or rented from the state for farmers market growers. Hmm. And that was nice to have that combination, because people who were growing for their home foods were able to interact with the for-profit operations and learn about, you know, sort of the economies of scale and tools and techniques for growing in larger plots.
Sure. You're listening to Nancy Dubosc
mm-hmm.
on Business IQ Radio 105.1 here in Bedford. And we're talking about some of the innovations and activities that are going on in the local economy, dealing with a resurgence of the farming business, it sounds like, one of the ways to describe it.
Yes, so. Yes. And I also, as I mentioned before, I mentioned the nano breweries. We're also seeing a resurgence in local specialty foods. And their challenge, much like any food manufacturer, is how do you get your product out? How do you get your product into the market? And so as business advisors, we come up with all sorts of fun, creative ways. And it's really joy. It's just such joy to work with the entrepreneur that is open to try different marketing opportunities. And we do a lot of online marketing work. We focus a lot on creating websites and advertising through Facebook and Instagram and all different platforms, social media platforms, for these specialty food products, because so often they come up with the most interesting packaging, the most delightful labeling, much like some of the local wineries do with their labeling. Which makes it adds even more value to the product. And we have a lot of entrepreneurs out in the Monadnocker region who are quite successful specialty foods, granola makers, gourmet crackers, our nano brewery, up and coming nano brewery.
You know what I've heard from clients who are in that field? Sometimes they start in their kitchens, mm-hmm. and it's very confusing because the regulations for starting a specialty food business are different from town to town, and getting their arms around, you know, what that takes can, you know, because it varies. Maybe if you're in Manchester and there's a licensing requirement for commercial space, mm-hmm. now you're having to carry that extra expense. So the access to commercial kitchens can really make or break it, depending on what the local health regulations are around.
Here in New Hampshire, we have wonderful support through the Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Foods, and Health and Human Services, their Food Safety and Food Protection Division. Actually, a little backstory on me. When I first moved up to New Hampshire, I ran two specialty food commercial kitchens. One was in Epping and one was in Lancaster. And I got to know the folks that work in the licensing bureau very well. And a lot of them are still there. I find making some phone calls on behalf of my clients now, I'm finding the same people are there. They're very dedicated. But we have wonderful resources for people wanting to start or wanting to grow their production with those kinds of questions. Can I continue, you know, if I'm producing so many quantities per week, so many bags of granola per week, and I'm selling them, when do I become commercial and need to be licensed? And you're right, Andrea, each town is different. Each city has their own
Could you repeat that resource? Could you repeat the resource was the Department of?
It's HHS, Health and Human Services, the Food Protection and Food Safety Division.
Okay, and that's a state?
That's a state office. And they know everything about licensing. They know, they will tell you if you're producing meat product versus cheese product. There are different requirements for that. There are requirements for how you build out your space in a commercial kitchen to separate. If you're going gluten-free, and there's a lot of that going on. I have two clients that produce gluten-free products. They can't share a kitchen with another producer. There are all sorts of requirements, tricks of the trade you have to be very careful about. And our state does a really good job of managing that. So if people are looking for information on any level of commercial food production, manufacturing, give me a holler and I can direct them to the right person.
Thank you. One of the differentiators, I think, for a food business, from what I understand, if you sell direct, you have a little more leeway as to whether or not you're regulated. It's when you start going through the distribution.
That's right.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, and there are different requirements for on-farm sales if you have a farm stand and you're doing value-added production on farm. There are certain amounts, and I don't have the exact numbers in my head, but there are there is a threshold to which up to which you can sell. And working out of your kitchen, the same thing. And you are right, when you start working through a distributor, working with wholesalers, and then going across state lines, you have to jump through various different hoops, get different licenses. And that's very heavily detailed.
You have to really get that.
You have to look at the business, what they're doing. And a large part of our advising process with these clients or with these entrepreneurs is, can you afford to take that next step? Can you afford to produce? Are you in a space where you can start selling your product to Whole Foods or to Hannaford's? Are you ready to do that? Can you afford it? Or do you need a new space? Can you still continue to operate out of your kitchen, your home-based kitchen? So those are the kinds of conversations we have, is to determine, you know, the cost of doing business and can you afford it?
Just because I'm ignorant about it, what about these businesses I see all the time, which, and actually when my children were younger, we would go to, it's pick your own apple, pick your own blueberries. Are those as highly regulated? Are those considered?
No, not highly regulated, but that is a critical, part of the mix on a diversified farm, because each type of operation you have has a different profit margin, you know. And the pick-your-own typically can produce a higher profit because it's much less labor-intensive for the farm. There's a lot of loss, of course, because you've got folks in there like me and you and Andrea in there popping handfuls of blueberries in our mouths while we're
one for you and two for me.
Two for the pint. And
weigh me
for...
as I come in and weigh me as I leave, right?
Right. But that's a pick your own is still very big. Very, very big.
And I actually worked with somebody who had a different kind of farm. He had a Christmas tree farm, which is, again, a lot of fun to do. And I pick up on what you're saying about the diversity, because he made sure he did other things during the season. Like during Halloween, they'd run hay rides, and they'd get into the fall, and in terms of taking advantage of the foliage and moving people around, and pony rides in the summer and things like that. So.
Yes, and a Christmas tree farm is a long-term investment. That's not just an annual growing of asparagus or celery or tomatoes.
You bet.
That's a long, well-thought-out long-term investment, and many people that I know who have been in farming have used that as supplemental income for the farm. And that works beautifully. If you've got the land to do it, that works beautifully as another profit center, quote-unquote profit center for a farm operation.
So we have the advantage also in the state, and you're part of the university system, of UNH having I think, a pretty well-respected school of agriculture. Yeah. And I'm sure that that's another resource. Do they have an operating division in Keene, at Keene State as well, or is it only over in Durham, do you know?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about. The UNH research-based educational resource is primarily Durham, although they do have places where they do research throughout the state. Probably even better than that is Cooperative Extension. And Cooperative Extension, as I'm sure you both know, is an extension of the land-grant university to bring the benefits, the information gained from all the research out into the community and apply it with the farmers. I love Cooperative Extension. I'm sorry that it's been defunded so often over the years, because that's a critical connection between the university research and application, real application in the field.
Did they have services for the business community through, you know, in the crops and agriculture?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I highly recommend that. We have a very strong Cooperative Extension here. And I highly recommend, if anybody has a specific question about growing, not only the technology and the techniques and the chemistry of growing crops, but also the marketing and, you know, financial feasibility. To Google their Cooperative Extension, find their nearest office, or find the expert that may be out of Durham. But all the information is available online. It's incredible. And not to be limited to New Hampshire, Cornell has fantastic programs. They're actually Cornell. A lot of the land-grant universities have online study programs for people in specific crops, in small-scale farms. And they're, you know, and Cornell, and we're not limited to Cornell, UVM, Pennsylvania. I mean, a lot of the land-grant unities, and they will specialize in different areas. So, you know, I always encourage people to get online and just Google your question. It's amazing what will
they
come
do,
up.
And they're happy to respond. I think I've used the Cornell service once
or twice.
It's
a fantastic program. Yeah.
So again, just because I don't know a lot about this, is there an equivalent development taking place in terms of our fish resources? We certainly have a lot of lakes and streams and rivers in the state.
Could I make mention of that just to let you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the long-term effect of being in the Northeast and having power plants in the Midwest, you know, all that air pollution comes over and deposits itself in New Hampshire's lakes. And I think there's a health advisory that says don't eat more than one if you're an expecting mother.
And
don't eat more than one fish.
That is caught in lakes, so freshwater fish.
Exactly.
So trout and...
Yeah, I mean, so if you go on the DES website, they'll talk about that.
That's a little bit discouraging.
Well, it's, you know, it's the mercury fallout from...
Consequences.
Right, yep. Fossil fuel combustion.
Well, there's been not an upsurge now, but I'd say about 20 years ago, aquaculture was quite popular. New aquaculture farms were popping up all around New England, I think in large part to the response to that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's one down in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, that's been quite successful. I don't know about New Hampshire in aquaculture in response. I'm sorry, I don't have that information. But fish as an industry, when I think of fish as an industry in New Hampshire, I think of the coast. I think of, you know,
seafood,
saltwater seafood industry. Which
but there is a Nashua, there is the there is a salmon fishery where they try to breed them and release them into the
rivers. But that's primarily for recreational fishing. And if we're talking about business development, I don't see a lot of that. I would tend to see that more in aquaculture. Development of aquaculture, closed system, closed cycled fish farming. And I don't see, I'm not aware of a lot of that in New Hampshire, but I know what's going on around the Northeast. And We'll see. I think with climate change and increased pollution, that could be a better option, a bigger option in the future.
There is a new crop in New Hampshire. Does anybody want to guess?
So, marijuana.
Medical marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
So they're doing a lot of...
That's huge business.
Hydroponic.
I'd love to have
No, it's not hydroponic. It's just indoor, right?
We have to have you back to talk about that.
I would love to have a client growing.
That's a great topic.
To talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, those profit margins could be very exciting.
Yeah. Well, this show's gone very quickly, as they always do. Thank you, Nancy, for your time. I guess we want to sort of close with saying, do you have any thoughts about the future of agriculture here in New Hampshire?
Or any tips that you could leave with, you know, like, here's the top three things you could maybe leave the listening farmers.
I would say, yes, top three things is do your business plan. No matter how large or small you are, no matter at what stage you're in your farm operation, the development of your farm operation, do your business plan. Step two, come see an SBDC counselor to work on that business plan. And step three, be very careful about your initial upfront investments and not to get too strapped. Come see a counselor, come see an advisor, and talk that through. So be proactive about your business planning.
So if somebody wanted to reach out and ask you questions, can you tell us how best way for them to reach you?
Well, the best way for them to reach me would be at the Keene Regional Small Business Development Office. And we're located actually at Keene State College, which is a fantastic opportunity for us. And we can be reached at 603-358-2602. My email address is nancy.dubosque, D-U-B-O-S-Q-U-E, at keene.edu.
Or they could find you through the NHSBDC website,
I
would think.
Absolutely, which is, by the way, a fabulous website for business resources.
Yeah, we agree. Well, thank you very much. We have a tradition that I'm going to turn the show over to Andrea to close us off here. And we have a tradition, and then she has our traditional sign-off. But I wanted to say thank you for joining us here on Business IQ Radio on 105.1. And we would like to have you back to talk about some of these other topics as well.
I'd love to do that. Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
So this is possibly an ill-conceived segment, but we just love to bestow
it's a tradition though.
Additional information on our listeners. So we have a bucket of quotes that we would like you to pull one out random and read.
All right.
Let me lift up this big bucket.
I hope it's Buckminster Fuller or somebody
me
like
too.
That. Wouldn't that be great?
That I loved.
I hope there are no candidates quotes in here.
Me too.
Oh my goodness, this is long, and it's wonderful. Are you ready?
Ready.
20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones you did do. So throw off the bow lines, sail away from safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover. Mark Twain.
Wonderful.
Woo, love that one.
Aww.
Well, thank you very much again, Nancy Dubosque from SBDC. And on that note, Andrea?
Yes, and I'd like to thank our listening audience for tuning in. And remember, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.